bring in our great friend, North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer, for a lot more on all of this. Senator Cramer, thank you, sir. You've been in the Ukraine, so you're more than just an observer. You're actually in the middle of this thing. I just want to ask you right at the top, what is your opinion about putting in whatever, 8,000, 8,500 additional American troops into the NATO theater? What do you think about that?
Well, Larry, I think you hit the nail on the head in your monologue. What we should have done has been tougher up front with regard to, for example, Nord Stream 2, when Joe Biden, that was really an act of appeasement. When he let that pipeline be finished off on behalf of Angela Merkel in Germany, and of course, as a result, Vladimir Putin, he handed Vladimir Putin a weapon in this entire confrontation. And so had he been tougher up front, had he recognized the Vladimir Putin's ability to use energy as a force, as a lever, really a weapon in not just with Ukraine, but with all of Europe, we may not be here today. That said, then we come up to last week when, six of my colleagues and I, a bipartisan delegation, went to Ukraine to exercise and demonstrate our solidarity as a country, our solidarity as a Senate, Republicans and Democrats, standing with our president and our State Department, saying we stand with Ukraine, we will stand against Russian aggression. And the next morning we have a nice meeting with the president. We spend an hour talking about all these things. And later that day he says, well, if it's a minor incursion, well, maybe we have to talk about it. I mean, that's like inviting a jewelry thief to the Tiffany's Christmas party and telling him not to touch the merchandise. I mean, it's just absurd. And so this weakness that is presented by his actions doesn't match the tough talk. Now he doubles down by sending troops. And to be fair, all of NATO seems to be somewhat engaged in this or willing to move troops around in some sort of an exercise. The problem is that if that is to be a deterrent, which is what their hope is, when you've seen these weak moves by our president up to this point, it's hard to take him very seriously. So I worry that the mixed signals are creating more chaos, frankly, than a deterrent.
Regarding NATO, Senator Cramer, Germany is of no help. In fact, Germany has been a hindrance. In fact, Germany looks to be rather more on Putin's side. They've stopped arms movements into the Ukraine, and they've issued statements that are ambiguous at best. And I guess they just had to fire one of their Navy guys. I'm just saying, NATO, well, the biggest chunk of NATO is Germany. France and Germany apparently negotiating with Russia on their own. The United States is not on that phone call, so far as I know. I wish I were wrong, but that's what I understand. And as Donald Trump said time and time again, they're not really paying their fair share of the financial burdens either. So, like, what's NATO? Why do I want to put, or anybody put 8,000 troops into NATO? I don't get that.
Well, for good question. I mean, I think it's 8,500 of our troops, and along with other NATO troops, moving throughout Eastern Europe to send a message of solidarity. But you're right. Germany has been a particular problem, both in their first of all, their acquiescence to being captive by Russian natural gas through the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, it really endangering many of their own allies and neighbors in their neighborhood. But remembering too, though, that the stability of Europe is what's at stake. It's not simply, Ukraine, another former Soviet state becoming again a Soviet state. The ramifications are to a stable or an unstable Europe. And so we need to have a strong NATO. We need to have a strong Europe. The problem is that within the European Union themselves, they are a little bit confused. I mean, you talk about France and Germany negotiating with Vladimir Putin. I just read a story, an energy story, where France is trying to convince Germany that their nuclear should be considered clean energy in the European Union. Germany's response is, well, our gas should be, and neither one thinks the other one's fuel source is good enough to be considered clean energy. I mean, this is sort of backyard nonsense. We need to have a serious discussion about stabilizing Europe, because remember, it doesn't just end in Europe. right? You already talked about Afghanistan and what that the kind of signal that sent to Vladimir Putin. Well, what we do here is going to send a signal to China and Taiwan. It's going to send signals to Iran. You already talked about the acquiescence to Iran, not the acquiescence. I mean, helping them pay their United Nations dues right. So they can vote against us.
Can we?
I mean, it's complete absurdity.
Can we pause on that? I don't ever mean to interrupt, sir, but I'm just saying.
No, no.
I just got wind of this. It was actually, I saw it this morning, a New York Sun editorial. It was put together by Seth Lipsky and my friend Claudia Rosette, old Wall Street Journal editorial writer and a great lady. So I wasn't aware of this. So let me get this right. We're going to pay Iranian dues so they can vote on a new John Kerry, God knows who, deal with Iran, right, which has broken everything and building their 60% home on nuclear weapons, and we don't have to go to the U.S. Congress. Now, can't anybody, I mean, can't Senator Kevin Cramer just stand there on the well of the Senate floor and just yell about this and say, stop, stop, stop?
Well, you know, if I was at the Senate floor, I probably would have gone to the Senate floor and said, stop, 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 along with a whole bunch of my colleagues, but we're not there this week. No, the way this works is there was, what, $18 million that was frozen in an account in South Korea. The United States, unfroze it, thawed it out, and told our friends in South Korea, go ahead and give it to them. I mean, really, if you and I were to write a spy novel, you know, we couldn't come up with a scenario like this one.
Yeah, boy, it's just so disappointing. Now, let me ask you this. The report from British intelligence, and again, you were in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to get the Ukrainians.
Just last week, yeah.
What'd they say to you? Like, the British Foreign Office or somebody, I don't know, GHHQ, somebody saying that Russia plans to invade. They've got surrounded now. There's on the eastern side, of course. Now they've got their troops in Belarus up north. They already own Crimea. They're putting ships into the Black Sea. So they could go into Kiev. It could be an unofficial. It doesn't have to be an official assembly or whatever Biden characterized it the other day in his press conference. Is there going to be a coup d'etat? Do the Ukrainians think there's going to be a coup d'etat?
Well, you know, interestingly, the Ukrainians themselves, including the Ukrainian leadership, are not as convinced of an invasion. At least they weren't last week. They may be more convinced today than they were last week. Of course, they're hopeful because remember, too, that they've been living with this sort of tension for the last at least 8 years where, Russian troops come close to the border and then they may back off a little bit. Obviously, occupation of Crimea, Georgia, Belarus, they've always sort of been hanging around in a bit of a nuisance. So you tend to get a little too comfortable, perhaps. And that was my sense from the Ukrainian leadership. All of that said, this latest revelation from British intelligence suggests to me that may be the minor incursion that President Biden had in mind. But I can tell you, Larry, a pro-Russian leader embedded into Ukrainian leadership, perhaps even, as the president, also recalling, they don't have a single member of parliament in Ukraine, this pro-Russian party. But to put somebody like that in leadership in Ukraine would be about as destabilizing to Europe as an invasion itself. I mean, I don't really see, it would be like a difference without a distinction in my mind in many respects. So Ukraine is tough enough. While they're freedom-loving, democratic people and a sovereign nation, they still look more like Russia than they look like the United States in many respects. And I think President Zelensky's done a good job of rooting out, little by little, some of the corruption in the country. He ran on an anti-corruption platform, was hugely successful as an outsider, much like a president that we know. Mm-hmm. But I think you also find when you get into office, it's not as easy as you might have thought. But I think he's making progress little by little, and we ought to be standing up for him and for that sovereignty as long as he's still the duly elected president of Ukraine and not green lighting in any way, shape, or form the embedding of a Russian, pro-Russia leader into Ukraine's parliament or, God forsake, or God help us, into the presidency.
You know, I sat in on two bilateral lunches with President Trump and President Zelensky, and as did others of our national security team. I thought he's a very smart guy. I do not think people routinely call him corrupt. He's not corrupt. There's no evidence that he's corrupt. there is evidence that he's trying to fight corruption and right. cleaned house on their legal establishment. One last one while I have you here. There are 52 moles in the U.S. Senate that are working to save America and kill the bill. 52 moles. Now, they killed the effort to kill the filibuster, so that's awfully good. And yes. I know President Biden on Wednesday said you're going to have build back smaller pieces or chunks or whatever. But in a word, Senator Craig, we've been counting on you. You're one of our main people. Are we going to save America and still kill the bill?
Well, I've been called worse than a mole, Larry. And
I say that with much love and respect.
I could tell that was an affectionate term from you. But I actually think, interestingly, the idea of breaking it up into chunks is fine as far as I'm concerned. But there's really nothing in the Build Back Broke plan that's all that great. There might be some bits and pieces here on energy policy. I think the best way to move forward with some bipartisan suggestions is to wipe the slate clean, get a new white sheet of paper, sit down with people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and others who want to be serious about bipartisan solutions, and then move forward. As you might have noticed, we have this little inflation problem. We have a southern border problem. We actually have an energy security challenge that was fixed a few years ago, and now it's back. I think there are bipartisan solutions, but I think it's time to just knock off the nonsense. We're not going to blow up the United States Senate. We've already run up more debt than is helpful. Let's sit down now and have some conversations. I think there are some things we can do together.
Great. That's just the kind of mole that we love. Senator Kevin Cramer, you're terrific,
sir. You're the best.
Thank you ever so much. Talk soon.
Thanks.